Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. So I'm here in Lanzarote. The weather's not been particularly good, but we're sat at a lovely restaurant called Arena. The wind is blowing. You might be able to hear the music in the background. And my guest today is Paul Cadwell Hoonam. Now, Paul is from Swim Lanzarote. Is that right, Paul?
That's right, exactly.
So perhaps you could tell the listeners what you do here in Lanzarote first so they get a feel for why you're my guest today.
Well, I do everything that's open water. So whether it's surfing, life-saving, lifeguard training, coaching, swim coaching in open water, obviously triathlon coaching as well.
So we'll give everybody your details at the end, but you and I know each other. We've known each other for a few years now, and I think we got to know each other when I came down to one of the regular swim sessions you run down at Playa Grande, which is the beach where the Ironman in Lanzarote starts and finishes the swim.
Yeah.
So you have sessions there Tuesday, Thursday and Sunday, is that right?
That's
from 9
right,
o'clock?
Yeah. 9 till 10.
So you have your regular group here in Lanzarote, but then if somebody's on holiday here or they're doing some training, they're welcome to come down. It's is it 5-6 euros for guests?
Yeah, we'd normally do a 5 or 6 euro. Well, 5 euro for guests. Normally we charge a tenner, but anybody who's listening to this would get it for a fiver because they must know you.
maybe not. But we'll give them your details. And so if they're coming over here, it'd be particularly useful if you're doing Ironman Lanzarote this year or any year in the future. Paul usually has a clinic on the beach every morning in the run-up to Ironman Lanzarote where he talks about how to read the ocean and how to make the ocean work better for you. So that's what we're going to talk about today, Paul. So there will be listeners who have races planned, Ironman Lanzarote, half Ironman Marbella, Ironman Barcelona maybe, Ironman France, and several of the others where they have ocean swims, and yet they may not, let's say for somebody doing Ironman Lanzarote, they may not be able to swim in the ocean in the UK before the middle of May, and they probably won't be able to even swim open water. So firstly, let's talk about what they might be able to do in the pool to prepare themselves for swimming and racing in the sea.
I mean, a lot of people neglect all the basics. I was just having a chat with some people from Swim Run Germany, for instance, and we're talking about what the main problem is with swimmers, whether it's open water or whether it's just swimming in general. Pool swimmers included, they always have a problem with breathing. And that's exaggerated when it comes to open water because of the anxiety that open water produces. You've got that race scenario. It's a situation that you're not sure of. You don't know. And then you're looking around. You've got all of these people around you. And you start to think, oh God, here we go. What's going to happen? Your heart rate gets up. Your breathing goes all apart. And then when you get in the water, it all goes wrong. So one of the biggest things is to try and make sure that they're bilaterally breathing. There was a time when I would kind of go, yeah, okay, if you're breathing unilaterally, yeah, okay, we can work with that. But now I've kind of changed my view in that it has to be that you have to be able to bilaterally breathe. All the swimmers who swim with me are being told, a lot of people come with injuries and say, I can't rotate because I've had an injury with my shoulder or with my neck, but they can because it's the whole rotation of the body that they can use, that you can utilize it rather than try to lift their head up and crane the neck.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying. It's important to be able to breathe bilaterally, to be comfortable with breathing to both sides.
Yeah.
Now, is that something you're going to suggest that they do in a race, or is it just that there's a reason why they need to be able to do it so that in case something happens in the event?
I mean, I would suggest that they could do it in a race because if you're trained to that and you train with your cadence in the pool, if you're using a metronome, if you're using something like that and you can get into that rhythm, you can use short bursts with unilateral breathing. But when it comes to the open water, to keep in a straight line, to keep your stroke balanced, if you get slop from somebody, if you get hit in the face from that side, you can automatically turn around and go to the other side. Where with some of the guys that you know down here, one of the guys had done a race and couldn't bilateral breathe. However, after his 2 or 3 weeks of training, when he eventually got into the race, all of the waves were coming from the wrong side for him. So he had to breathe entirely to his wrong side, but he managed to do it. And when he came out of the water, he said, that was fantastic. The bilateral breathing worked. I said, but you didn't bilaterally breathe. And he said, no, but if I hadn't learned to, I wouldn't have been able to breathe to the other side.
Okay, so for those of you who are not aware of the swim course here for Ironman Lanzarote, you swim away from the beach and make a left turn, and then you swim parallel to the beach with the beach on your left-hand side and the marker buoys on your left-hand side. So if you can only breathe to the right, it makes it more difficult for you to see where you're going. Then you turn and you make a left turn again.
Yeah.
And you're swimming into the beach. And then just before you hit the beach, probably 50 meters out, there's another left turn. Now you're swimming parallel to the beach, but the opposite way. But the buoys are still on your inside, aren't they?
Yeah.
So the buoys are always on your left-hand side here. Then you come out at the far end, back at your start point, and then you do another lap. So the buoys are on your left. However, the wind direction is from the north generally. And that means that on the way out, the waves often are coming at you from your right side. So if you're a right side breather, not only are you not going to be looking at the marker buoys, you're going to be hitting the waves, getting the waves full in the face.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then on the way back, if you're breathing to the left, you're looking at the marker buoys. But as you turn to breathe, you also get hit in the face. So you need to be able to breathe the other way so you don't get a face full of water.
Yeah, so effectively, if you can breathe to either side comfortably, and some of the training methods that you can use is when you do, say if you're going up the scale, if you're breathing every 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, on the even ones, do it to your wrong side.
Right, so we call that weak side breathing. Yeah. You call it wrong side breathing, but force yourself to be comfortable breathing on the opposite side, because even bilateral breathing sometimes doesn't make it comfortable breathing on your weak side, does it? Yeah. I can bilaterally breathe, and I know lots of other people can quite comfortably, but if you said to me, breathe to your right, although I don't go any slower, it feels a lot more awkward.
But I think it's like everything. The more you do it, the more you train to it, and the more you push yourself out of that comfort zone. But a lot of people, especially when it comes to the water side of a triathlon, especially the greater distances, the emphasis is on, if I can just get through this section, and if I can just get out of water in time for the cutoff, then I can get onto the bike where I'm strong, then I'm onto the run.
So it's one of survival for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's not the right way to start a race, no. Is if I can just survive this bit. I mean, you and I have been at the start of races and seen that 80% of the field is petrified and 20 of them are waiting to get into it because it's their strongest suit. Okay, so breathing bilaterally is going to set us up for being able to cope with the weather and the way the course is set out. What other things can triathletes be doing in the pool right now in February to prepare them for a race in May or June?
There's a couple of the drills that are really important. One is finger drag to keep a nice, relaxed hand. Because you think about it, you have to relate things to other events. And for me, when I was doing my Ironman training, I was running and clenching my fists. So I was getting really tight shoulders. So then, if you adopt that same approach when it comes to the water, a lot of people have like a high arm recovery. A lot of people have a swinging arm recovery. Some have a high elbow recovery. But if you can persevere with a finger drag, it allows you to relax your hand.
Okay, so a counterpoint to that, though, will be, and I've heard this from coaches, and I've probably even said it myself, is that if you're training people to drag the fingers, the hands aren't that far above the water. Now, if you're swimming in choppy water and you're used to having your fingers quite low to the water, and they're not going to get caught by the waves?
They can get caught by the waves, but if you're doing, depending on the course, of course, but depending on what your race tactic is, so you can still train to do that, but when you're doing your training to improve your catch on the water, the finger drag is going to get you in straight away with your fingertips. Whereas what we see a lot of triathletes doing is putting thumb first entries and stuff like that, or being too tight. When they come too tight, they come in too close. So I can take your point completely that the fingers would slap the water, but if you up your cadence, you can get through the water and you can push through a little bit quicker.
Okay, so finger drag really for relaxed arms rather than teaching you in a race to have your fingertips trailing through the top of the water.
However, I'll give you an example of this. Ironman, during the race in Lanzarote, we know what Ironman is here. We know how the swim goes here. You and I do. So Mark, who you know, I told him if any point in the race he gets stressed. So anytime during that race he gets stressed, he's pushed a little bit too hard. He needs to back off a little bit. So before backing off and then lifting your head up going, okay, I've got to keep up. I've got to keep up this pace. If he went into finger drag for 50 meters, it calmed him down.
Okay. So it's like a cue for him to just ease off the pace a little.
Not so much ease off the pace, but if he felt like he was getting anxious because he'd gone too quick, you don't actually lose speed. For me, I can swim the same speed doing finger drag. And this is open water. It's swimming there 3 mornings a week. You know, we do one pool session, but it's always handy to have these drills in.
Okay. So trailing fingers.
Yeah.
You mentioned cadence there.
Yeah.
In the ocean, how important is it to have a higher cadence, do you think?
It's really important because it helps you to push through the surf. You know, it helps you to push through the waves, push through the current. It also keeps that continuous rotation of arms. If you think about the cranks on the pedals on a bike, same sort of situation. A lot of swimmers that we get coming down here, they do this big glide because they're pool swimmers. They spend most of the winter in the pool. They don't get a chance to come into the open water. And as soon as they get in somewhere like Lanzarote, they've got this big push of tidal stream coming against them one way or the other. And then all of a sudden, that becomes a push off and then stop, push off and then stop.
So the analogy I often use there is if you were to drive down the motorway, your foot's on the accelerator, you do 70 miles an hour, then you ease off. And then as your car loses momentum, you accelerate again. The actual usage of fuel is far higher that way than if you were to just keep a constant 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about there, particularly if you're swimming, because we talked about the way that the wind is here. Depending on the way the current is, you could be swimming with the, you could be swimming with the current, in which case it's not such a problem. But if you're swimming against the current and you've got waves in your face, every time you glide, you're basically slowing down.
Yeah, I mean, at some point in this course here, you're going against the current.
Okay, so trailing fingers.
Yeah, high cadence.
Higher cadence. Now we use in the pool rubber bands around the ankles.
Yeah.
To really make people's legs drag, and you can see this quite markedly that if their cadence drops, their legs drop.
Yeah.
They're almost swimming at 45 degrees. Eventually, they end up swimming vertically. But if they keep the cadence up, they can keep the legs high. Now, I know a lot of triathletes will say that kicking isn't important because a wetsuit will help them to keep their legs high. My belief is that just a balanced kick helps them just to keep a higher body position, even with a wetsuit. You can see that people still have like dragging legs, even with the rubber of a wetsuit, yeah?
You know, when you look at the wetsuit thing, obviously the wetsuit gives you lift, but if you look at the dynamics of the wetsuit after that, like how thick the legs are. So somebody wants to have a 5 mil leg, which is going to float their legs right to the surface, which means that they can't efficiently kick. 3 mil leg, you can kick a little bit more, but it's about controlling the core. So if you can control your core through your kick and be able to push yourself forward a little bit, the kick isn't the main emphasis for me when it comes to triathlons, because it equates to around about 11% of your speed.
If that, for most triathletes, they're not going to get any thrust, but that's the, again, I think they're missing the point. The mindset for them is kicking adds nothing to my speed. I say kicking improves your body position,
of course,
which means there's less drag.
Well, it holds the core.
Yeah. And so with less drag, less energy used, more for the latter part of the run. You know, that bit where you suddenly feel like you're losing it. You need it then, don't you? That last 5K. All right. So we've got some stuff we can be doing in the open water. We can do in the pool to practice for the open water. There's some other things that we use in the pool. Swimming, taking a lane and having 3 or 4 people in there. So you get used to having others in close proximity. So your arms get nudged. You're not be able to get the perfect stroke each time. You have to deal with that. You have to deal with somebody constantly tapping your toes or banging you on the head. Practicing drafting.
I mean,
do you do a lot of that out here?
We do that every session that we do, even like the pool sessions. The other drill that you can use really efficiently in the pool is fist, because fist allows you to engage your forearm.
Okay.
Because you don't have a paddle anymore. So then when you do your open hand swimming again, it feels like you're going really quick, almost like you're wearing paddles.
Okay. So we do that one.
Yeah.
We do 25 fists, 25 swim without, but I've also had them doing 6 strokes fists. So they get the feel of the comparison much quicker.
Yeah. When it comes to the other open water skills, sighting, drafting, obviously we've got two great methods of drafting where you've got your inline drafting. So we do that on our pool sessions and our open water sessions. And we also do arrowhead drafting where you're just at the side of somebody. So if you're balanced on their hip, the good thing is where it goes back to the breathing again, you can keep an eye on them if you can breathe to that side because you can watch what they're doing. If you're at the other side of somebody, you need to breathe the other way. So it goes back to that old classic of breathing. Both techniques are really efficient.
We found, and I know they've done this in the World Triathlon Series, the guys in Leeds who are racing the WTS, is that if you've got a fast swimmer and you want him to tow you along, swim right on their feet.
Yeah.
So you've got Richard Varga, for instance, when he was in Leeds, the Brownleys wanted to swim right behind him. They knew how fast he could swim and they knew he'd swim a straight line and they could trust him. So they swim on his feet and they get dragged along. If you've got a fast swimmer, but you want to slow them down and get an advantage yourself, you swim on the hip.
Yeah.
Because that disturbs their little vortex, creates drag for them, but allows you to swim in the slipstream. Now, that may be a little too advanced if you don't know the swimmer in an Ironman race.
I mean,
there's two reasons for doing.
Yeah, but you can pick people off. Like what I try and advise everybody is when they're going into the water, a lot of people with the intimidation thing as well, you can start from the outside, work your way in. I was reading in an article, I'm not 100% sure where I was reading it now, but they said swim close to the boys going out in the Ironman for this course, which is really, really terrible because you get squashed against the boys.
Yeah.
So I was advising people to go at the far right, but then everybody's gone at the far right now because everybody's worked that out. So the center was a perfect stream of clear water, but that clear water isn't going to give you an advantage because if you can get on somebody's feet straight away, and you can stay there, it's going to save 38% of your energy. So your main aim is to come out of the water with your best swim time feeling like you've just done a warm-up.
Okay, so I get that. Swim strong, but use as little energy as possible. Yeah. Okay, so we have our swimmers.
Yeah.
They're coming out here to Lanzarote. It's the first European Ironman, full Ironman of the year. They haven't been able to swim open water in the UK, and they may be arriving in Lanzarote a week before the event. So they're going to go down to the beach, and they are going to look at the sea. What can they do in that week to prepare for that race?
To give them
an advantage over all the other people who are only going to be here for 7 days.
Yeah.
What can they do?
They're going to say, "Where's Paul?" And they're going to come and see me, and I'm going to sort it out for them. What they need to do is they need to get in the water, obviously. They need to, first of all, look at what's happening around them. So there's a few key elements to this. So you've got buoy movement. So if you look at the buoys on the beach, the buoys are always lined out. If the buoys are bowing out one way or the other way, you can tell which way the tide is pushing. So the tide moves from west to east as it comes in and east to west as it goes out. If you're swimming in the UK, northeast coast, where you basically could be swimming.
No.
No.
But anyway.
You could be if you get in your car. So same principle as it washes up there. So here we've got a tidal movement of around about 3.5 meters on a spring tide, which is when all planets are in the line. It gets quite technical, all of that. So we've got springs and neaps. Spring tide, full moon or new moon. Neap tide, when it's only a half a moon. So spring tide is when you've got the biggest push of the tide. And neap tide is when you've got the smallest variation of tidal change.
Okay, so the race is going to start at 7 o'clock. Is it worth going to the beach at the exact start for the race? Or would you turn up and swim in the afternoon? You're not going to get the same sun conditions. You're not going to get the right same tide conditions, are you? So would you always advise people to go and train on the beach, wherever it is, whether it's Lanzarote or France or something, at the exact time of the race to see what the tidal and the wind and the weather conditions
are like?
Yeah,
you've got to train at the exact time, hence why on Ironman Week we do them the workshop every morning, because it allows people to see what it's like with the sunrise. You've got to know all your surroundings around, all your surroundings. It's the only way for you to get a distinct advantage.
Goggles, goggle selection. You know, bring a couple of pairs of different goggles and try out dark goggles. You know, it might, it's probably going to be sunny, but it might not be. It might be a bit cloudy, in which case you want a different pair of goggles. So would you always have a selection?
I would take a selection, but I would make sure that everything that you've already, that you take with you, you've already tried all the way through your training.
Okay.
A lot of people will try different things. You know, when you get to an expo and you see something and you go, I've got to have that. Yeah, yeah, you've got to have it, but you've got to have it for after the race, because everything should be done, like as you coach yourself, everything's done through training, which leads you up to the event on itself.
Okay, so just to summarise, we're going to do all this practice in the pool. They could, I know where we swim, you're allowed to take your wetsuit in and use it in the pool. So if you don't get the opportunity to come to Lanzarote in advance, or if you don't get the opportunity to swim in the sea before your race, at the very least, make sure that you've tried it in the pool. Make sure that the zips zip up properly, that there's no tears, that there's no nasty bits rubbing around your neck, that it fits, that you're comfortable in it so you don't get that anxiety you mentioned. And then when you get out here, you've got to use everything you intend to use on race day, and you've got to go down there. Would you advise that they swim every day? Maybe not the full course, but just maybe 15 minutes to get used to the water, because it always takes me 2 or 3 days to get used to the feel of the way the water flows, and I always feel more comfortable even if I don't do any hard training, just with being in the water more frequently.
The last year that we've just done, the water was horrendous 3 days before Ironman. We did one loop of the course every morning, and 15 minutes gets you warmed up, but it doesn't get you into the feel of the area itself. So you can do a quick 15-minute warm-up, but that kind of resembles to me how you see people race morning who spin their arms over. I think you've got to get in and you've got to try and swim a loop of the course. To me, my opinion is that swimming for that week every morning isn't going to destroy you as long as your nutrition's right. If you keep fueling, if you keep getting your rest in the afternoon, you're sloping down with your bike and your run. So now you just got to think, okay, so what's the limiter here? And the limiter for them, like you just said, 80% of the field is the ocean. It's a thing that stresses everybody out. As soon as you do that a few times, as soon as you get into that area a few times, you know what the problems in the course is. Say, for instance, Lanzarote, that extreme of the course where you turn left at the very bottom end of the beach, there's generally a lot of current in that area, and it lasts all the way until you get past the blue doors.
So, I mean, that's another thing that we could emphasize, is that when you swim to the far end of the course, you can see some bits of landmass that are right ahead of you that you can use to focus on.
Yeah.
In case the orange marker buoys aren't visible from all the arms, there are bits of landmass sticking into the sea that you can focus on in the distance that are easier. If you're looking to your left in Lanzarote, you can see those blue doors you talk about. And then when you're going back parallel to the beach, you can focus on the hotel at the end, can't you? The white hotel. So it's always worth, wherever you go, looking to see if there are any significant landmarks to focus on. You say swim frequently. I would agree with you on that swimming for half an hour doesn't really take a lot of energy to do, but it will help you feel far more relaxed. Now, what are some of the other anxiety points that people have about swimming in the ocean? You mentioned swimming with lots of people, but what other things do you find that people are afraid of when they get into the open water?
A lot of people are afraid of deep water.
Okay.
So I'll give you a perfect example. One of the guys came over a few years ago, did the first loop of the race, so the first loop of the swim, and pulled out in the second one, swam out to the first buoy, come back in again, because all of a sudden he could see the bottom. So you have to be comfortable in where you're swimming. It's pointless doing a sea swim if you feel really uncomfortable in the water and you haven't prepared for it. So one is deep water. Wildlife. A lot of people are afraid of what's in the water that's going to sting them, bite them, eat them. And in reality, everything that's in there is desperately trying to get away from 1,800 people thrashing like mad at them. Yeah.
That's an irrational fear, but one which you either get over by just swimming in the ocean regularly and convincing yourself through experience that nothing untoward's going to happen, or if it really is a limiter, then see a sports psychologist that can help you with some rational self-talk to overcome that fear.
Yeah.
Or as they say, if you're worried, just swim faster than the person next to you. That old adage about don't worry about the lion, just be, worry, just be faster than the bloke next to you. All right, so we've covered an awful lot there. It's very basic stuff, but it can tick off a large number of boxes for those swimmers, and particularly those swimmers who are those triathletes who are concerned about that first part of the race, the people you mentioned earlier that are just trying to survive so they can get onto the bit of the bike or the run which they feel more comfortable with. So if I recap then, in the pool,
yeah,
drills, breathing first,
yeah,
learning to breathe both sides comfortably. You don't have to do it in the race, although it can help your pacing, but it just means that if you are forced to do it because of the weather conditions or the way the course is set up, then you can do it without having to worry about it.
Yeah.
Practice some drills that are going to help in open water. Trail fingers more to relax the arms.
Yeah. Alleviate stress.
Yeah, alleviate stress. A faster cadence.
Yeah.
To cope with the elements of the water that are going to bring your stroke to a dead stop. Do include kicking on a regular basis so that it just helps improve the rhythm of your stroke and keeps you a better position in the water.
Yeah.
And I mean, we haven't talked about this, and it's, I don't think it's ever happened here in Lanzarote, but in some races, they could go and find that it's a non-wetsuit swim. And that's the point where body position becomes more important because you don't have the buoyancy of a wetsuit.
It's a classic, choosing your race really carefully, working with your coach, discussing what you want to do, what you want to achieve that season, what race suits you. If you're not comfortable in open water and you're not considering being comfortable in open water, then don't do the sea swim. Do something else. Work with your coach all the time. And I was speaking to Kenneth about this.
Kenneth Gaspin, the organizer of Ironman Lanzarote. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was speaking to him about it, and he was talking about the importance of a coach and how people overlook it and go, yeah, I can do that out of a book. However, that book isn't feeling them. It's not working with them. And he said the likes of Paula Radcliffe flies coaches thousands of miles, or a physio thousands of miles from Canada just to work on her because she trusts that person. And I think it's really important that everybody works towards that area.
Okay, so and I would emphasize there then, if you are coming specifically to Lanzarote, it is worth looking Paul up because A, he's got a lot of experience of swimming in the Canary Islands here, particularly Lanzarote. But he's also an Ironman University coach, so he can help you just prepare for those specific things. The one or two little things that you might have forgotten that can make a big difference, like freaking out when you get to the deeper part of the course. Yeah. Okay, so we can practice in the pool, swimming with other people. We can practice in the pool with our wetsuit. We can practice our head-up breathing, something yeah. most people neglect. You just add a couple of head-up breaths every length so you can get used to sighting.
And even when we're doing ocean swimming, we try and fit in the drills of breathing every ninth or doing alligator. So that you're just looking.
Breathing every ninth or looking up every nine?
Sorry, looking up every ninth.
So looking up, so you're saying nine. You wouldn't recommend anything more than that?
Once you can bilaterally breathe efficiently, looking up on ninth or sighting on ninth is quite good because it stops disturbing your body position in the water.
Okay.
The more you look up, and if you look at people doing unilaterally every two breath, what you'll see is you'll see their body position change quite rapidly. So there's a lot of movement. In a pro, it's a lot different to an age grouper because the age grouper feels like they're doing what the pro's doing, but they're less efficient in the water because they haven't got the time.
So what you're saying is there's a sweet spot in looking up more frequently enough to make sure you don't go off course, but not so frequently that it's disturbing your body position yeah. each time. And that's around nine strokes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we practice all that in the water. Then we get out to the venue. And I think if you're coming from the average British spring to Lanzarote, that it's worth getting out here 7 days before. I know a lot of people think that because it's Lanzarote and it's close, they can afford to come out on the Thursday before. But you don't. The race is on a Saturday here, and it always has been. So if you arrive on a Thursday, you've really only got Friday morning to have a quick swim. That's not enough to work out what the conditions are. On that day also, you've got to do all the other bits of admin. You've got to go across. If you're staying in Puerto del Carmen, you've got to go across to Club Asante. You've got to do your briefing. You've got to do your racking.
Yeah.
know, there's a lot of travelling around, which causes stress. So getting here a few days before gives you the opportunity to come and see Paul, to check out the course, to have a few swims, get the feel for the ocean, just to get the feel for your wetsuit as well in the in the salt water.
I mean, it's essential. You know, everybody has holidays, and I know that you can do whatever you can do with your job, with your family and all them other things, but try and get there before.
So getting here on the Monday or Tuesday if you can, or coming out to Lanzarote for a camp in February or March to get a feel for the course, to get a feel for the roads and the wind that you're going to have to face on race day on the bike course as well, which is something else we could talk about at another time. But
at great length.
Yes. It's windy today, isn't it? Which is why we're doing this podcast. Okay, so Paul, for anybody who's coming out to Lanzarote in the next few weeks, or for somebody who's coming out to do Ironman Lanzarote this year or maybe in the future, how will they find you? What, can you give us a website that they can go to?
Yeah, they can get us at info@swimlanzarote.com and the Swim Lanzarote webpage itself, so swimlanzarote.com.
Okay. I'm pretty certain Paul's a nice guy. He's very generous with his time. So if you had some really pressing questions before you get out here about Ironman Lanzarote, and you find Paul's website or Facebook page and address those questions to him, I'm sure he would answer them to make life easier for you. And of course, then you can repay the favour by looking him up and going to one of his swim sessions a couple of days before the race.
The thing is, I'm more than happy to help, because I know how it feels for people down here. I watch them coming down here all the time, and I watch people improve and break through them barriers. So I understand, and I'm really more than happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, and I'd add that if you really are one of those triathletes for whom the swim is the survival part and you're just petrified about it and just want to get it out of the way, anything you can do, any little tips that you can get from Paul, or even in another venue, you know, if you're going to Ironman France or something, from local experts that will help you get through that with a little less anxiety, it's going to get your day off to a much better start. And when you're out there for several, you know, 10, 11, 12, 15 hours, if you can reduce the anxiety at the start, it's just going to be a better experience all around.
I think it shows as well, a couple of years ago when we had a lot of athletes who were going through, a lot of them were swimming with me. They were doing their training with other coaches, but swimming with me. So I got them to do that important warm-up of the morning, which is around about 400 meters, which took around about 8 minutes because there was a bit of intervals in it. It was at 6:30 in the morning. They got into the pen ready for the race, and they were all ready. And they were told, instructed, make sure you draft, make sure you relax, make sure you breathe correct, take your time. They did it, and every one of them had their personal best swim, but every one of them also had their personal best race time, because they're not coming out of the water going, right, now my race starts, I'm going to get on the bike now, and now I can go. Because then they start to find themselves destroying themselves the first 30K. They're in El Golfo before they've calmed down.
So maybe we should finish off with the bit that should have come at the start, the warm-up. I know a lot of people go, well, I'll just get into the pen and I'll just start slowly. But of course, it doesn't happen like that, because there's 1,800 thrashing arms and you feel compelled to swim with them. So I would always advocate, and by the sounds of it, you would as well, a structured warm-up that you've practiced at home, that you practice here in the few days before the race, that gets your body warmed up. So think about a Formula One car. They do the warm-up lap to get the engine warm up so that when the lights go green, the car's ready and the driver's ready. You will be hanging around for 15 minutes once you've done your warm-up, but mentally and physiologically, you'll be ready to race. And that, as Paul said, is not just important for your physical performance, it's important for your mental performance and having the best day possible.
Plus, anybody who's doing Lanzarote, I actually get in the water and swim that warm-up with you.
Okay, slightly to the side of where they go. Okay, so there we go, folks. That was Paul Caldwell-Hunam from Swim Lanzarote. You've got his details. We'll put them in the show notes. If you're coming to Lanzarote any time between now, which is February, and Ironman Lanzarote, which is the last weekend in May,
26th of May,
then please do look Paul up for his advice and his swimming guidance. And I'm sure he'll be welcoming you down to swim with him on a Tuesday, Thursday or Sunday morning. So, Paul, thanks very much for joining us today. Listeners, thank you for being here again. And I look forward to you coming back for our next podcast.
Thank you.
That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.